It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump's first major test to move his legislative agenda is set for later today, after Republicans postponed Thursday's vote in the House of Representatives on their health care reform bill over uncertainty about its passage. Mr. Trump has threatened his fellow Republicans with leaving Obamacare in place and focusing on other issues if they do not support a vote Friday on the new health care legislation, a signature campaign promise of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Democrat Nancy Pelosi suggested that the reputation of some lawmakers is coming under scrutiny because of this health care bill.
Republicans vote to destroy health care coverage, especially in this brutal form. Well, that vote is going to be tattooed to their heads. They can't say Donald Trump made me do it. He's not their boss. Their constituents are their bosses.
President Trump lobbied lawmakers who are not backing the bill, putting his skills as a dealmaker on the line. Trump, however, failed to win over the conservative House Freedom Caucus by Thursday's planned vote and even alienated some moderates afraid for their own political futures. The U.S. Senate's leading Democrat has said he will not vote for President Trump's Supreme Court nominee and is urging all members of his party to do the same. Senator Charles Schumer of New York said Thursday that he would lead a filibuster against appeals court Judge Neil Gorsuch. Republicans currently hold 52 seats in the Senate, meaning several Democrats would have to vote in favor of Gorsuch to end debate and approve his nomination. For details on more news, join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Londoners held a vigil in Trafalgar Square on Thursday for the victims of the attack on Westminster. Nigel Persko and his wife Elizabeth were among the crowd.
And we relish our freedom, and we are proud to be British, we're proud to be Londoners, and we hope we are an open society who will welcome everybody here.
On Wednesday, police say 52-year-old Khalid Massad's SUV struck pedestrians, killing two on the Westminster Bridge before breaching Parliament's grounds and fatally stabbing a police officer. The attacker was then shot dead by police. Police are continuing their investigation, searching for a motive for the deadly attack. The Pakistan government says terrorists are financing their activities through waves of crime, including extortion, drug trafficking, and kidnapping. Pakistani media say the yet-to-be-released report cites the more than 200 local and international terrorist organizations generate billions of Pakistani rupees to fund their activities. The report also said some terrorist groups get rich off selling military equipment looted from NATO supplies that pass through Pakistani land before arriving in neighboring Afghanistan. Friday marks World Tuberculosis Day, and the World Health Organization is warning the battle to wipe out the global TB epidemic will not be won unless the stigma and discrimination of tuberculosis patients is brought to an end. Lisa Schlein reports on the launch of a new WHO ethics guidance for the treatment of people with tuberculosis.
The World Health Organization says stigma and discrimination against TB patients hamper efforts to wipe out this deadly disease. WHO Global TB Program Medical Officer Ernesto Jaramillo says vulnerable people such as migrants, prisoners, ethnic minorities, marginalized women and children are most likely to suffer abuse, neglect, and rejection. He says this prevents them from seeking treatment for tuberculosis. New WHO ethical guidance includes actions to overcome barriers of stigma, discrimination, and marginalization of people with tuberculosis. The agency says protecting the human rights of all those affected will save many lives and will make it possible to end this global scourge. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. State Department is asking American embassies and consulates around the world to identify certain groups that should get extra scrutiny when they apply for visas. This directive also instructs U.S. Post overseas to review the social media accounts of visa applicants who are suspected of terrorist ties or having been in Islamic State group-controlled areas. For details on more news, we invite you to join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Somalia's president appeals for famine assistance.
Almost half of my people are facing acute food shortages, and about 15% are facing famine. I am truly saddened by this situation, as the Somali people are proud, generous, hardworking, and truly resilient.
Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo is Somalia's president. Kenya says it will reopen its border with Somalia to boost trade. Anglophone suspects in Cameroon demand separate trials. There was a violent student protest Thursday in Unjala University in Sierra Leone. And civil society and opposition groups in Tanzania are disappointed with President John Magufuli after he fired his information minister on Thursday.
It was so embarrassing. We really think it's against human rights. The government is trying to suppress the freedom of media, the freedom of expression. When you talk against the government now, you are in trouble.
Pansiyansi Mlo is a Tanzanian civil rights activist, and a new vaccine against the diarrhea disease retrovirus is found to be superior. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports in our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Somalia's new president, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo, appealed to the international community on Thursday to help his nation avert an approaching famine. As VOA's Margaret Bashir reports from the United Nations, 6 million Somalis are in need of humanitarian assistance, and cholera is also on the rise.
President Farmajo spoke to UN Security Council members by a video link from Nairobi. He said that he and his new cabinet, named just 2 days ago, are ready to battle the drought-induced food crisis the country is facing, but that they cannot do it alone.
Almost half of my people are facing acute food shortages, and about 15% are facing famine. I am truly saddened by this situation, as the Somali people are proud, generous, hardworking, and truly resilient. They would have been the last to ask for assistance if they could somehow find a way to survive and be their reality.
The president, who took office last month, said people walk for hours in search of food and water. Many livestock have died during the severe drought, taking both food and work away from the population. Somalia knows too well the consequences of drought and famine. More than 260,000 people died the last time such a crisis hit the country, in 2011. Current international efforts to prevent the situation worsening are severely underfunded. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
The Kenyan government says it will open its border with Somalia to boost trade and allow the flow of people between the two countries. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta also pledged to help Somalia in the fight against Al-Shabaab militants and support and train government workers. His remarks follow a meeting he had in Nairobi with his Somali counterpart, Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo. Mohamed Yusuf reports.
After a closed-door meeting that lasted more than 3 hours, the two heads of state addressed the media in a display of friendship. President Kenyatta discussed the border issue.
We agreed to take the following actions. Within the shortest possible time, open two border posts in Doble Liboi and Mandera Bulahawa, and to facilitate the movement of people, goods and services.
The borders have remained closed for the last 2.5 decades since Somalia descended into conflict. However, people living along the borders and refugees have found a way to get into Kenya. Kenya has also agreed to train 500 Somali men and women in different economic fields, including teaching, nursing and administration, to help in their country's rebuilding and recovery. Despite the optimism expressed by the two leaders, the threat of Somali militant group Al-Shabaab exists, and both countries have reaffirmed their commitment to defeating the organization. Kenya has also had issue with Somali refugees living at the Dadaab refugee camp in the northeast of the country. The East African nation plans to close the refugee camp, the world's largest, by the end of May. But in what some say may be a change of heart, Kenyatta says his government will build a training institute at the camp to educate high school graduates.
Kenya will establish a technical training institute for youth currently in the refugee camps, as well as the environs of Dadaab, and this I believe, will greatly help in providing these young men and women the necessary skills that they will require to develop and grow Somalia.
Thousands of Dadaab High School graduates cannot join universities and training institutes in Kenya because they are confined to the camps. Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Mohamed says the latest economic collaboration will improve the security of the region.
Close economic cooperation between Somalia and Kenya will not only help to improve the lives of our millions of people, but it will also enhance the security situation in East Africa. Therefore, my government is ready to work very closely with your government in the realization of full economic cooperation between our two nations.
The two East African countries also agreed to cooperate on security issues to confront the threat of Al-Shabaab in the region. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Tanzanian civil society and opposition groups have expressed disappointment after President John Magufuli on Thursday fired his information minister. Opponents said the minister did his job after criticizing Dar es Salaam regional commissioner Paul Makunda, an ally of the president. This after the commissioner, accompanied by armed men, stormed the offices of a private television station, demanding it broadcast a video in which a lady alleged she had an illegitimate child with a local pastor. But the station refused to air the video. The criticism of Commissioner Makunda seemed not to have gone down well with President Magufuli, who then fired the information minister. Civil rights activist Pasianzi Mlo tells viewers Peter Clotty that the sacking of the minister is yet another indication President Magufuli is intolerant of dissent.
Our major concern as civil society to President John Pombe Magufuli is how he has been handling the whole issue that led it to force and to sack out his minister. The whole public was against the act that was circulated all over the social media. Everybody's being astonished as to why the president is protecting, is overprotecting, in fact, the commissioner. No, this act is legally. And there are a number of issues before this act that we see the president is trying to overprotect the commissioner. Despite the fact that he has been, since when in power, President John Pombe Magufuli has been trying to fight the issue of fake certificates. Even the members of parliament from the ruling party, the same itself, they are trying to question why president should not take action of this commissioner.
I also heard that former Information Minister Nape Nnauye, after he was fired, decided to hold a press conference to talk to the press about what happened. Security officers prevented him from doing to another case, they said, of undermining somebody's freedom of speech.
Yeah, exactly. This exactly happened in the afternoon. He called the press that is going to speak with the press and let down the Legion of Police commander. Decided to stop that press conference that he was supposed to hold at hotel. So he decided to hold a brief address before the media outside the hotel. And then he was ordered to leave that press, leave apart the harassment he got as a former minister. It was so embarrassing. We really think it's against human rights. The government is trying to suppress the freedom of media, the freedom of expression. When you talk against the government now, you are in trouble.
Some Tanzanians are expressing concern, including opposition groups, saying that President Magufuli is encouraging dictatorial tendencies and that the freedom that is guaranteed in the constitution, the ability to speak without harassment or intimidation, is being flouted by the government led by President John Pemba Magufuli.
Yeah, you know, one of the main characters of the dictatorial government is non-observance of rule of law. Since when John Pombe Magufuli came into power under this regime, we have seen a number of instances where laws are being suspended. Decisions are being made arbitrarily. People are being fired from public services arbitrarily. There is a ban for political parties to hold meetings in the public places until 2020 when we have another general election. So if we link up all these activities which are taking place, we really see that there are elements which suggest that we are going to be under dictator. You can see where we are heading. Now people are not happy. They fear to even implement new ideas, new projects.
Pastor Yanzi Mlowo is a Tanzanian civil rights activist. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the commercial capital Dar es Salaam. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, March 24th. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Schools have remained closed and businesses paralyzed in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions of Cameroon as the strike initiated by teachers and lawyers against what they call the overbearing use of French enters its fifth month. Three strike leaders and another group of 25 people arrested from the English-speaking regions appeared in the Yaoundé military court on Thursday, and the case was again adjourned. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports for VOA from Yaoundé.
I will never forget my hope.
Morning, Council.
Morning, Council.
Bibik Simancho sings that he will never forget his home as the military escorts him to the military court in Yaoundé. The military orders a handful of people who came out to see the suspects to not shake hands with them. Among the curious onlookers is Minang Flora, who says she traveled 400 kilometers just to support the suspects.
I want to see them, to encourage them and pray for them. How long, no matter how long it takes, we shall get there.
Along with Nkongo Felix Agbobala, Fontem Afoteka Neba, and Bibik Simancho, who are accused of organizing demonstrations in December that turned violent, 25 other suspects have been arrested from the English-speaking regions since the strike started. Defense counsel Eta Bisong Jr. says they found it inappropriate for all of them to be judged together.
There was an application for two separate cases to be joined and heard and determined at the same time. And the lawyers for the defense were opposed to that. And the court has adjourned the matter to the 7th of April for a ruling.
On April 7, the court will rule on whether the three leaders should be judged separately or together with the 25 others. The case itself has been adjourned to April 27. The court rejected appeals for the three leaders to be granted bail. The charges levied against them are conspiracy to terrorism, rebellion against the state, incitement of civil unrest, breach of the constitution, provoking civil war by inciting the people to take arms against each other, and propagation of false information. Cameroon is using a 2014 law on suppression of acts of terrorism and a 2014 law on cybersecurity and cybercriminality. The suspects could face death sentences. Some strikers are calling for a return to federalism, while other leaders want secession. President Paul Biya, after meeting Italy's President Sergio Mattarella this week, said they discussed the issue, but that national unity in his country is not up for negotiation. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Students at Unjala University in Sierra Leone protested yesterday in three cities over the continuous closure of their university due to a four-month-long lecturer strike. At least one person, referred to as a bystander, was killed and several students wounded. The police accused the students of engaging in violent acts. Michael Mitchell is the public relations officer for the National Union of Sierra Leone Students. He says the students' protest was caused by frustration over the failure of government and university authorities to reopen Unjala University.
It has seemed that the efforts of us, the union representing students, have been futile, to a point that the students who are component of our constituent Unjala University couldn't bear the embarrassment anymore. In fact, what gave them the inspiration more to come out in this very large number is the fact that the vice chancellor of Unjala University made it known to them that according to the University Act, any university that is not open within 3 months of the academic year could possibly lose that or forfeit that particular academic year. And counting down from January, the start of this particular year, if you check in it, 3 months will be at the 31st of March. So the students themselves felt that the cases were not being taken with the greatest of seriousness, not from the academic staff, not from the administration, and not from the government. It seemed more like the trigger-happy police, the tear gas sparkling happy police, were not happy with the situation. So whatever they might have done, they escalated the peaceful protest that students were actually on. There were gunshots fired by the Sierra Leone police.
Michael, you said your organization has been in communications with the police or the government since February. Why do you think the government has not been able to reopen Unjala University?
According to the vice chancellor, who is the academic head of the administration, he said from the administration point that they are actually not having money present to give to the academic staff. The academic staff are claiming that the administration had promised them that they were going to give a 400% increment of their salaries from 2011. And so it has accrued from that era to this particular point. And they feel that it's high time the administration paid up to what they promised them. So plus minus, the government is saying that because they've subvented or subsidized the university, they cannot give additional money to the administration. Instead, let them settle their own scores there. However, our own call as a union is as simple as this. The government is expected to provide all educational activities in the country.
Has anybody been killed? Because according to reports I'm looking at, was that there had been a fatality. And then what do you make of the allegations that some of the students had been violent?
The information that we have right now is that, yes, two students were being shot, but they are not killed. A person was killed, who is said to be a trader. But for us, we have not had any information that the person is a student. Now, to answer the question about whether the students were being violent, as I said earlier, the call of the students was very legitimate. Like every other academic institution in this country, I can confirm to you that the University of Sierra Leone are already going halfway through their first semester. If Jala University, it seemed like an isolated case, but also very troubling, hosting about 6,000 students and have not even started classes, I think it should be a concern for every person, not excluding the government. So to say the students are being violent, for me, I think for us, that's a non-starter of the argument. Let's start by digging up what have actually caused for them. So I've actually expressed their frustration to that point. The thing that led to that was because some people were being negligent of their duties.
Michael Mitchell is the public relations officer for the National Union of Sierra Leone Students. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A new vaccine against the diarrhea disease, rotavirus, that kills about 600 children a day, was shown to be almost 67% effective in preventing the severe illness. As viewer Jessica Berman reports, it is expected the new vaccine will get more widespread use than existing ones.
An estimated 450,000 young children and babies die each year of diarrheal diseases. One of them is rotavirus, which causes a severe infection of the gastrointestinal tract. Experts say rotavirus is responsible for about 37% of deaths among children under 5 who succumb to diarrheal diseases each year, or about 215,000 deaths annually. But a new vaccine, known as BRVPV, was shown to be 66.7% effective in protecting 3,500 young children in a clinical trial in the African country of Niger, one of the poorest nations in the world. Only 31 cases of rotavirus were reported among 1,780 children who got the vaccine, compared to 87 cases among those who received placebo. Details of the study and the vaccine's effectiveness were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Dr. Emmanuel Baron is director of Epicenter, the research arm of Doctors Without Borders, which conducted the trial.
We saw actually three things. The first is that this vaccine is efficient. The second is that this vaccine is safe. And we also saw a good acceptability by both the care providers and the families.
There are two existing vaccines, but Baron says they are relatively expensive and not user-friendly. The problem is they need to be refrigerated, which is a constraint in many African countries where rotavirus is most pronounced because refrigeration and electricity are unreliable. So the existing rotavirus vaccines are not widely used. Even when children are immunized with the older vaccines, Baron says hundreds die each day around the world. The new vaccine does not need refrigeration for up to 6 months.
That's VOA's Jessica Berman reporting from Washington. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the 2017 IWAF World Cross Country Championships scheduled to take place in Kololo, Kampala on Sunday the 26th of March, where Kampala appears set to host the biggest World Cross Country Championships in more than a decade. Commissioner of Police Frank Wisingwa is the head of security for the championships.
And as security plan number one, we are starting right from airport to make sure these people are secured on the routes up to the hotels to make sure they are safe.
An estimated 557 athletes from 60 teams are set to compete in the senior men, senior women, under 20 men, under 20 women, and mixed relay races with a total prize money of $310,000. Ileana Baloris and Tevo Dunbar are from Team USA.
It seems pretty challenging, so I think it'll be really fun but challenging.
400-meter downhill and then a really tight turn, so I think that'll be tricky to navigate.
Dominic Etuset is the Uganda Athletics Federation president.
60 countries are going to compete here. The total of athletes and coaches to the tune of around 800.
In golf news, 156 golfers drawn from across the globe will be battling it out for a total prize money of just over 22 million shillings in Kenya, with the winner taking home over 3.5 million shillings at the Kenya Golf Open at the Par 71 Mutiaga Golf Course. In football news, there were several national teams that were involved in international friendlies on Thursday. In Nairobi, East African rivals Kenya and Uganda played to a 1-1 draw at the Kenyatta Stadium in Machakos. Both teams were using the match as preparations for group phase qualifiers in the 2019 African Cup of Nations, which get underway with match day one fixtures in June. Stanley Okubi is Harambee Stars coach, and he says his side didn't utilize the chances they created.
Definitely, of course, I'm not happy with the draw today, because for sure we deserve to win, considering that we created so many chances, but we didn't utilize them. So,
for the craze of Uganda coach Milutin Micho Seredredovic, there was no reason to underrate both sides.
Team of Kenya, very good transition, very fast, reaching towards our box. We have underrated in one situation Olunga, that is top-class player. This is why Chinese took him.
In London, Manchester United striker Kelechi Iheanacho's penalty 7 minutes from time secured the Super Eagles of Nigeria a 1-1 draw with Senegal, preserving Nigeria's coach Gerard Ross' unbeaten record. Later today, Morocco are set to square off with Burkina Faso at the Stade de Marrakech in Marrakech, while Guinea are scheduled to play with Gabon at the Stade Ocean in Havre in France. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. And do have yourself a nice weekend.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, March 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as Sports Editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Butt in Washington saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Get ready this Sunday for an exciting hour of African music and music news. I've got the hottest hip-co from L.I.B., supreme Saharan rock from Niger, and a fantastic interview with Rocky Dawuni, Ghana's Afro-roots reggae king. We were together in Zanzibar in February, and let me tell you, Rocky gives an amazing interview. There's more too, but I'm out of time. So just trust me, peeps. You're gonna love it. Tune in to VOA Africa's FM station Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Yeah!